I'm sorry, but I had to call in the police.
What? Are you serious?
Yes. You are under the influence.
Oh, that's just great, friend. What am I supposed to do now?
Just go with them. It's for your own good.
Okay. Rudolph, you don't have to put on your red light.
That's good.
Help stand my Christmas tree.
Ooh, that's better.
Every gift I wrap, every flight I map,
got you in my grasp.
When you're in my lap, I'll be watching you.
That's perfect.
You don't have to put on red light. 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 You don't have to put on red light.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is helping!
We are the wild and crazy guys!
Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
Yeah.
We're still in our Halloween mode, Mark.
I love it.
And look, we're back for our second spooky Christmas film and 1 week away from the big day.
The big day. What are you going to get dressed up as?
Oh, wait.
Bro?
I guess it's the second big day. Our big day is
right.
The really big day.
But the relatively current big day. Did you pick out a costume for this year yet, Bob?
Mark, I was seeing this going as you. I'm that other festive fan.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't know if you just made it up. A half-hour story told in 5 minutes. Our neighbor, big Halloween people, I mean, super crazy, have their yard decorated. Doug and Jackie, in case you're listening. They used to have a Halloween party every year. Big fun week for the cul-de-sac. But my neighbor, Dave, one time came to the Halloween party dressed as me.
Oh, I got to consult with Dave then.
He conspired with Sue and the boys. I didn't notice he had my Cary Grove hoodie on.
I know that one.
He put a couple pillows in his belly because he was a little smaller than me. I had a beard at the time, and he had a white beard on. He had one of my hats on.
Oh, my God.
I used to have like this Vikings necklace thing that I would wear.
Now, when you saw him right away, did you know he was you?
There was a little bit of delay, but I was like, oh, my God. I would say probably the ugliest costume I've ever seen, but it's been done before, Bob, so that's what I'm telling you. You need to come up with a new outfit.
All right, then I'll be the tattoo, the festive foreign film fans tattoo on my butt. I'll be that.
I like that idea.
Okay, so yes, what I was thinking about, because I get almost not as much as excited for Halloween as Christmas, but nearly as much, and I thought about these two holidays and the things that I like about them. And I realize they have a lot more in common than you think. They really do. I mean, Christmas, it has its own supernatural elements. You got the ghosts, like the ghosts in Christmas Carol, spirits, winter solstice, the darkness they always talk about. It can be festively scary. even like elves and flying reindeers and all that, that's like a little spooky.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes you have people that are like, we're Halloween people and don't like the Christmas people. And the Christmas people are like, we're Christmas people. We don't like the Halloween people. And they really all got upset about Nightmare Before Christmas. But there is no need for that kind of antagonism.
No.
Because people were telling scary ghost stories like they say in Most Wonderful Time of the Year. And
right.
We can enjoy these holidays equally because we get the same complaints, right? We always talk about Christmas creep. Well, there's Halloween creep too because people see Halloween stuff in August that Hobby Lobby.
That's right.
And they get all upset about that. Decorations. People think people go over the top with their Christmas decorations. Well, as you indicated with your neighbors, and we have seen in your neighborhood is one of the big ones where people right. really go all out. Giant spiders and gravestones and huge skeletons this season. You have the Christmas season that runs pretty typically, I'd say, from the end of Thanksgiving all the way up until Christmas. And at Halloween, the whole month. And it's not just trick-or-treating on one day. It's like you got hay rides and haunted houses and corn mazes and pumpkin picking and
pumpkin spice lattes,
which I could use right now. So they have so much in common. And I think we talked about last time, they've come from the same background. And then last, as we have talked about and learned through this podcast, that in many countries, there are elements on Christmas that are very similar to trick-or-treating and Halloween. The mummers who go door-to-door asking for food or drink. The goats, people dressing like goats, people dressing like Father Christmas, people dressing like fools, singing, carrying on, all of that. So, but the one thing I did want to talk about, which is kind of fun, there also is Halloween Christmas music. These are songs that combine the favorite parts of Halloween with the best tunes of Christmas. It's a subgenre. Mostly they're kind of kitschy tunes, yeah. novelty type things,
yeah.
but they're kind of fun. Some, for example, are, and these are some of the most popular, but trust me, you go out and search, you will find dozens and dozens. All I Want for Christmas is Halloween by the Happy Fangs. You might have some parodies like I'm Dreaming of a Black Christmas by Count Bakula. That's a takeoff on White Christmas. Yeah. Or they take holiday songs and they go a little bit more macabre. So Alone on Christmas, How You're Going to Die by The Quiet Company.
Go in the attic.
Just go in the attic. Or the basement.
Or the basement.
Attic or the basement.
And better yet, if it's storming outside and there's lightning and thunder, go outside.
So the theme of tonight is be scared of these movies, but also enjoy both.
We can get along.
Yes, we can. And speaking of freaky things, we have to talk about the trivia for last time. I hope that you were able to ferret this out, this unique phenomena that's in Canada. What they discovered in the Hudson Bay area, it has a lower level of gravity than any other place on Earth. And they think it's two anomalies that created this. So there's less gravity there. Now, I don't know if that means we can jump higher or the massive ice sheet that covered Canada during the Ice Age is melting.
Okay.
And then also there are mantle plumes there, which are cold spots where the Earth's mantle sinks. So where there is less mass, there is lower gravity. That's our science lesson for the day.
I wish the fans could see the puzzled look on my face right now. It doesn't translate well on the podcast.
Where's Mr. Science when we need him?
Bill Nye, the science guy, please hit me up. Text me. Hit me on Graham, whatever.
Don't you just want to be driving through Hudson Bay and pretend you have a flat tire, go out, and then while Sue's sitting in the car, leap over the cars like that, float past her?
I mean, I don't get it, but it sounds really cool.
Yeah. And it's just up north.
Let's go. So you ready to talk about another scary movie?
Mark, I'm shivering in my boots.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Well, we're going to head out to Belgium for another strange Halloween scary type of movie. It has to do with an advent calendar. Did you ever have an advent calendar as a child?
So when I was a kid, once in a while, we'd get the paper ones that, you know, you have chocolate in them. When I had my own kids, I got not one as cool as the one in this movie, but we did get one that was deep and wooden, and we would do different crazy things like candy, but also fun stuff too.
Oh, fun. Yeah. That's really cool. I didn't really have them as a child. Oh. Probably the first advent calendar I remember getting is when I got a beer advent calendar.
Was that when you were 12 or
14? I don't know. They're kind of fun. I like your idea of doing one on your own. I could do it with the grandkids. Yeah, I like that. Anyway, this movie is about an extremely rare advent calendar. But let's talk about the two main actresses in this movie. One is Gina Darrois. You took French, Darrois.
Darrois.
She graduated with a science bachelor's degree, and then she traveled all across Austria and Asia. She also took part in humanitarian projects in South Africa. And after participating in some theater workshops and courses, she began acting for television and cinema. It's almost like an afterthought that she was going to go into this industry. The French actress has appeared in films from dramas to action films, but her role as Eva in the advent calendar is her first major role in a film, and she hasn't been seen in any English film language films as to date. But again, this movie is from 2021, so it is a recent movie.
Mark, this is always so humbling to hear about these actors and actresses. It's not only that they're famous and they're in movies, but, oh, by the way, you know, and then I also was part of the Peace Corps and ran a charitable foundation. I get up, change the remote control batteries, and I feel like I've accomplished something for the day.
I totally agree. So she plays Eva. The other woman in the movie who plays the role of Sophie is Orwane Magnor. She's a French actress. She's only 21, so a few years ago, and she decided, hey, I'm going to move to Paris, right, and take drama classes. Then she started singing opera, and then she started to go to the theater, right? Like you're just saying, perfect setup. And then after several years on the stage, she moved to television, where she is best known. But this is her first major film.
So, Mark, I think our problem is we don't just up and move to Paris.
You know, this movie, it's interesting for our fans as we go through this. This might be one of the shorter recaps that I do because so much of this movie, if I tell you too much and you watch it, you won't get the same experience.
Yes.
You know,
I agree.
But I would say this, it is a dynamic movie. It's about an advent calendar. I love movies too that give you like a quote and you're like, oh, what does that mean? The movie starts with this quote that stays there for like whatever, and it says, to digest natural and artificial joy requires you the courage to swallow it. Like, what the hell does that mean? The opening words there, just like, this is going to be a scary movie.
Just, and even reading it, it sounds sinister.
Then that fades away, and it says, dump it, and I will kill you. I'm like, oh, all right. This will be interesting. The movie is about Eva. So what we know about Eva in the movie as it starts is she is in a wheelchair. She's paraplegic. We know that she lives alone. She lives this lonely existence. She works for this guy who may be the worst boss ever.
Horrible.
And she's selling insurance. And he makes fun of her for having a different ability.
Yeah.
I think he even says, you're just a half a chick in a wheelchair or something like that. Tells her that he got a grant to hire her. The bathroom he had to put in to support her cost him a lot of money. And so she's in really a bad situation with her work life. She has a dad who is older, has Alzheimer, can't really relate to her anymore. She has a stepmother who's like
a Frau. Like, what the heck? Don't you love that hair?
Oh, my. You know, so it sort of starts with she's having some type of flashback to an accident, which you assume is what caused her to be a paraplegic. But that's what sort of what we start off in the movie. And then her friend Jess comes. It's Ava's birthday on December the 3rd. And Jess brings to her this advent calendar. And think about an advent calendar, though, like we were talking earlier. Like it is a big wooden,
right. It's
kind of a beautiful advent calendar. Yeah. And she stole it from a marketplace in Germany. And she sets it down. And Ava's kind of excited about it. She thinks it's really kind of a novel gift. But then they're celebrating her birthday. And then they decide, well, let's open up advent calendar. So Ava's also very active. She's an avid swimmer, but really her life is just her and her dog, Marvin, which I love the dog's name.
And Sophie is a mess. She's insensitive, but you know what? I kind of liked her. As problematic as she was,
yeah,
I still kind of liked her.
I think it's a balance, right? Because she's sort of self-centered.
Yes.
But at the same time, she's a very loyal friend.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And comes and spends her birthday with her. They're looking at the advent calendar, and she's like, hey, do you see what's on back of the calendar? And he turned around, and it's in German, and Ava doesn't know what it means. And Jess comes and says, well, it says, dump this, and I will kill you. And Ava's like, well, who's going to kill me? And she's like, I don't know, but that's kind of what it says on the back, right? So they open up day one, and in there is some rules. This first day has a little piece of candy. There's a little thing that's all in German, so Jess has to read it to her. It says, eat one, eat them all. It almost had a little bit Jumanji taste to it, right?
Like
all these rules you have to follow. And then, so that was rule one. Rule two, respect the rules until you open the last door. And then number three was, what's on the back? Dump it and I will kill you.
Nice present.
Nice present, right? Like, it's like this incredible, like, right from the very beginning. And so Jess eats it and it's like, okay, yeah, no big deal. By day two, things are getting freaky. So she's there on the third. So she's kind of opening them all at one time.
Yeah.
So on day two, she opens the door and reaches in and looks at this piece of candy and said to her girlfriend, Jess, did you do this? Did you arrange to have this candy in there? And Jess is like, no, why? And Ava was like, well, this is my dad's favorite candy. And Jess is like, wow, that's so nice. Like, what a coincidence. And so she puts that to the side. And so she opens day three to catch up. And day three is a little card.
Yeah, a little card.
And the little card says, to cure hurt, destroy what is hurting you. And then day four, again, to get caught up, she opens it up and it's a little baby Jesus candy. And she can't read the German. And Jess reads it and says, well, what the little thing said is, Jesus said to the cripple, arise and walk. So on the very first day, you sort of have these strange rules. You have this candy that's like her dad's. You have this weird saying about to cure your hurt, you have to hurt the person who's hurting you. To a paraplegic, there's this piece of candy that says, Jesus said, arise and walk. And so, you know, she does take the dad's candy after Jess leaves and she eats it. And when she eats it, her phone rings, which later on we find out that phone's been disconnected. And her dad is on the other end wishing her a happy birthday, totally with it. But then the movie then becomes Jess's journey through opening each of these doors up through 24. And so along the way, I don't want to tell what every single happens in one, because again, to experience this movie, I think you sort of have to see the step by step. But I think what I would say as we start talking about this is that along the way, Jess is sort of learning some things. One, she's learning, but if she completes all these doors and opening, it could lead to her walking again.
Yes.
She also, along the way, they're starting to understand that these doors, these things are going to require her to make a sacrifice. Sacrifice of herself, of her friends, of her family, and sacrifices meaning potentially death. And so she's going through this period. And at first, she's sort of like taking it in stride, right? Early on in the movie, Jess invites her out to dinner with her boyfriend, Jess's boyfriend, Boris, and another guy who are they going to go on a little date together, only to have Jess dump her boyfriend, Boris, go with the other guy, and then Boris takes Eva home and tries to sexually assault hers. But along the way, she has to face each day, each challenge, and she's conflicted. Do I want to walk? Don't I want to walk? Do I really understand what this means?
Were you conflicted with her? Were you going through in your head, what would I do? And that's what I loved, because you put yourself in her shoes and you kind of go, what would I do?
You're spot on. That's why I'm so conflicted about talking about this
movie. Because, and I realized when you started and you said that, I realized when you started talking, I thought, oh, wait, no, we don't want to, because this is a real thinking person's movie.
I would agree with you. And so she's conflicted. She meets this really nice guy who's really interested in her. Maybe some of the magic in the advent calendar helps them connect to one another. And so as she goes through each day, each step, each sacrifice gets harder and harder. In fact, somewhere along the line in one of the father's lucid moments, he tells her that this calendar is going to require more sacrifices. This is the price you'll have to pay if you want to walk again. If you refuse to do this, you'll die. The movie goes on and, you know, comes to the end. She discovers someone who's had the calendar before, goes and visits him. And that sort of adds a whole nother level to like, whoa, what
to
just
help
happened?
Understand the calendar.
Yeah. It helps understand the calendar. And at the end of the movie, as you get near the end, it ultimately comes down to she ends up having more of a choice than she thought in the beginning. And in the end, she has to make one final incredible choice. And you think you know, maybe you don't, but then like it's one of those movies too where it's like, she can do what she's gonna do, and it goes away. And it's like a year later, and then something else happens where potentially someone else is faced with a similar thing. And so tell me if I'm missing any other main points, but I would say it is a thinking person's movie.
When all of it's revealed, many things you'll go back and think about them again, you know, process them.
Yeah. And I think the characters in the movie did a very good job. And it really is all about Jess and Ava. Although everyone else sort of has a peripheral role. You know, I guess one thing I'd say we can reveal, it doesn't hurt the movies. Jess is actually the reason she's a paraplegic. She was in a car accident and was unattentive. Sophie, I'm sorry. But Sophie is actually the cause of her accident. And in the end, as things are sort of coming to head, ultimately we find Ava's forgiving her.
Yeah.
Doesn't want her hurt in any way. But when you watched it, first of all, let me go through our question. Did you feel like it was a festive movie?
You know, what's funny is I've been processing that now, thinking about it. Like, was it festive? And I thought, I think she had a tree. But what is surprising is other than the advent calendar, I'm not sure there was very much Christmas in it. To be honest, was there?
It is just a calendar.
I would say no. It's not very festive.
Yeah.
I think she did have a tree, though, in her house.
She did. There's some decorations there. I guess maybe I'm a little softer grader in a sense that since it's all centered around the advent calendar, I would call it a little festive, but I can see what you're saying. It's certainly less festive than our last movie.
Yes. Although, you know, and this is where I struggle. You say that, I'm like, oh my gosh, the advent calendar. I mean, the calendar counts to Christmas. And each day, so I go, how does it not? I guess I just thought there would have been a little more elements of the holiday, and you don't really see that.
There's more Halloween than Christmas.
Yeah.
How'd you feel when you're watching it?
It was suspenseful because at first you're curious, well, what is this? Then you're like, oh my gosh. And then it evolves and it changes and keeps you on your toes so that it's not like you know what's coming. And that's what's fascinating about it. And she keeps finding the little notes, and I'm like, this is really interesting.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, I definitely had the, what would I do in that situation? And think about, you know, I don't want to make this a downer, but think about if there was one aspect of your life that you really wanted to change. But to do that, you had to sacrifice things, people. Sacrifice again, thinking about death, but it's like, what would you do to reclaim something? And in her case, her ability to walk. There is a stressful element to that.
And you know what? What I always struggle with is you think that you know what you would do.
Yeah.
But you always wonder, would I really do that? You almost think I would make the noble choice. I would make the right choice. I think about that all the time, and especially when I see evidence of people doing heroic things. And I go, I would want to be that person. I hope that that would be me.
Yeah, totally agree. Like, I'm the same way. Would you watch it again in the future?
Yes, because I'll tell you, this one, I only was able to watch once. And I think it's one of these films that I would get even more out of it watching it again. It reminds me in some ways of Sixth Sense. After the ending's revealed, you want to go back and watch it again to see all the elements you might have missed.
I couldn't agree more. And then would you recommend this to someone?
Absolutely. I've always been thinking this since our last episode. Would you recommend it for Christmas or would you recommend it for Halloween? I didn't go into this thinking that way. And now in some ways, I might recommend this more around the spooky Halloween time versus the Christmas time.
I think this is a phenomenal film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend it for sure. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about how you say Merry Christmas in Belgian.
Ooh.
So the interesting about this is that in Flanders, they speak a Belgian version of Dutch called Flemish. In the Walloon region, they speak Walloon, which differs slightly from the French spoken in France. And the eastern part, they have a small portion of German speakers too. So it's one of those countries where, like, if you had to travel it, you're not sure what you should learn. But the most common way is Vrolijk Gastfeest.
That sounds cool. Vrolijk Gastfeest.
I know. The R is perfect. And, of course, Vrolijk Gastfeest means joyful Christmas. Mm-hmm. Of course, some may prefer the more traditional Zalig Christmas, which is Blessed Christmas. So this is an expression sort of cultural and heritage. And then if you go further north, you might get the little less common Vrolijk Zilag and become more of a neutral vision, which is nice. So nice Christmas, blessed Christmas, joyful Christmas, they say it all.
So wait a minute. So the Vrolijk is like the really best one, that's joyful. The one
that's what, yeah. That's joyful.
And is that, I don't know, Flanders or Wallon?
Flemish.
Flemish. Right. And then Zalig, that's... Was
I'm sorry, that's Flemish. I'm right. Sorry. Walloon is more French.
Okay. So, but what I find funny is the German ones are the just nice. Nice, yeah. Christmas.
Nice Christmas.
Sin Christmas. Well, the one thing that I picked up learning about Belgium is a glass of beer.
Let's talk about that. Let's just talk about that. So, Belgium has an excellent holiday tradition. Christmas beer. Woo. Most Belgian beers are sort of dark and heavy. This began in December, like late December of 1896, when two Belgian cafes started advertising special English beers at Christmas time. Their Christmas beer has sort of become a regular thing to drink at cafes throughout Belgium. They've imported Scotch ale with specifically designed Christmas ales. It's hugely popular because Belgian beer was often weak and brewed with old and used equipment. Sounds horrible. Belgian brewers start to notice, but the importers were unaware because they weren't calling it a Christmas beer. It's interesting.
It's like the Belgians saw it as an opportunity and marketed it. That's great.
Right. Smart. Soon the Belgian breweries started brewing their own Christmas beer. Right after World War I, brewing Christmas beer became a popular trend among the Belgian brewers. Sold under the word Christmas in English, perhaps to give it even a more import feel. And so today, Belgium has dozens of Christmas beers to offer, and there's some great names like Delirium Noel.
I've seen that one.
You know what? I actually have the Delirium Noel glass.
Oh my gosh. And you didn't bring it tonight.
Well, we'll make sure we post it, but it's a Santa sleigh being pulled by reindeer. It's being pulled by elephants. So we'll put that picture on. So Delirium Noel, Delay Notch, or Skadless Noel too. And so Belgian beers, I know in the Chicagoland area, are easy to get a hold of during Christmas.
So it starts out, Belgian beer's heavy, thick and heavy. These cafes start in 1896 and go, we're going to import these. We have these English beers. We're going to call them Christmas beers. They're lighter. People like them. They do well. But the Belgian breweries had old equipment. But then World War I comes along, and I guess afterwards they improved. So then they start making their own, and then they start calling them Christmas, even though they don't say Christmas because it sounds imported. Now people say, is that a Belgian Christmas? That is just, what an amazing route.
It's smart marketing. Another tradition to talk about is Assiettong in Madeira. Is the true Belgian Christmas meal. It's tender slices of veal, beef, ox tongue with classic Madeira sauce and mushrooms.
First, the name, I was like, it didn't sound that good, but once you're describing it, I'm like,
Has potential. Madeira sauce owes its name to Madeira, which is the typical wine from Portugal that is used in this dish. The wine is sort of the basis of the sauce. It has a festive main course served with crispy, tasty potato croquettes, a favorite in Belgium. They're a traditional side dish during the holidays, the croquettes are. In addition, you'll find in the South Belgian, canoe in French or Villard in Flemish, or the bread of Jesus, which is baked during Christmas time. It originated around Hainaut in South Belgium and has spread across Belgium and the north of France. So it's interesting, like I said, about Belgium. It's sort of that southern border with France. And I got to go there and figure this out because it seems like it's so multicultural and influenced by both. But it's
Because of the way you say Merry Christmas, I think of the canoe bread as being really fancy and big. Right. And then the Villard is smaller, but still really nice. And then the Germans, they just get a bun.
Yeah. The brioche is stuffed with pearl sugar, golden raisins, sultanas, sugar cubes, or chocolate chips. The bread is supposed to be shaped in the form of a swaddled baby Jesus. And then the canoe is topped off with a small decoration, like a little figure made from sugar to symbolize Jesus.
So it's like sugar bread.
Like sugar bread,
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Another thing that happens in Belgium is at the University of Vez, a city in Belgium's Wallonia region, they have a tradition known as La Saint Nicolas des Estudiantes.
So I think that would mean, going back to my French, I think it's St. Nicholas of Students. I think étudiants is...
Students?
I think it's students. I think so.
Okay. Beginning the first Monday in December, students go about the city accosting drivers at red lights, holding out their beer mugs for coins to pay for beer. Around noon on December 6, 1,000 to 2,000 students gather in front of the main downtown university building to begin their parade through the town. After a couple hours of marching and singing, they head back for the late afternoon of music and lots of beer. This sounds like a great time. Later, all the students take over the Carré-Lège pub neighborhood, and the party goes on until the wee hours of the morning. So this has been going on since the early 1900s, with the parade beginning in 1928. The solicitation of coins began in the 1950s. And the musical afternoon in 1984. So this is, again, another thing that's built over time. Yeah.
And Mark, we have found our new tradition. You know, each episode, we always find something we have to interject in our own lives. And I think the weekend before December 6th, we're going to be out at the local intersection accosting drivers for coins. And then on the 6th, we're leading a parade through town.
Is your birthday on the 6th?
It's the 8th.
It's the 8th. Okay, I know it's close.
We can still use it, though.
Another thing that happened in Belgium, more recent, in 2016, 2,200 red mailboxes were distributed across the country during Christmas. You know why?
Why?
They were decorated with a mitre.
Oh, that's that bishop hat.
Bishop hat, yes. Yeah. And a beard to remind children to send their letters or drawings to St. Nicholas. The letters do not need stamps and may be put in any mailbox, not just the special mailboxes. So their mailboxes were there to remind them, but you can put it in any mailbox. If the sender's address is clearly written on the back, it'll ensure a reply that comes back. So just like in Canada, another country that is sort of answering the letters of children.
You know what I love about this one? So many of the customs and traditions are from a long time ago. We still do them.
Yep.
But this is, in 2016, they put out 2,200 mailboxes decorated like St. Nicholas. How fun is that? And that was only, you know, what, 8 years ago?
Years ago.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
On that note, let's listen to some music.
En een ezel, dat was al. Maar boven in de lucht kon je een sterretje zien staan. Dat alsmaar zat te fonkelen, dring een wegwijzertje aan. En het heeft niet lang geduurd, of dat was daar vol een bak. Het krioelde van de herders met een dikke wollen frak. Jezus is geboren, halleluja, hallo. Jezus is geboren in een bakje vol met stro.
What we just listened to is a song called Blaske va Metro, mean tray filled with straw. The problem is it's not too popular with the Catholic Church.
Oh.
It retells the story of the birth of Jesus in the stable of Bethlehem, which is fine.
Yeah, I think they would like that.
Right? But unfortunately, it's more of a parody and tells how the three kings in the song bring completely different gifts to Jesus. A roll of blatrum, or it's like a linoleum, a jar of varnish, a salami with garlic, and an aquarium with fish. Joseph gets a drill with some screws. Jesus receives a scarf and some ivory pants. Mary is given a bag of cement with a big pink bow.
Wow.
Joseph introduces Jesus to the Holy Spirit and points out the similarities between their noses. The Holy Spirit laughs at Joseph and declares that he is Jesus' father, and Joseph punches him.
I want to hear this in English.
A fight breaks out in which the ox and the donkey are knocked unconscious. Then God appears and resolves the discussion by declaring that Jesus is his son. Jesus gets tired of the fuss, takes his bottle, puts on another fresh pea cloth and says, "Peace on earth to all who want it," and says, "Anybody who wants it to follow me and will have to run really fast." Is released by a comedian, songwriter.
Mark, I am going to challenge myself to learn how to sing this in English. I love the fact that they bring him linoleum and bring Mary a big bag of cement.
It got so controversial that some churches and the pastors are serving him Sunday sermons about, don't you buy this, it's evil and stuff. I mean, it's just satire.
It sounds funny.
It's just satire.
The only thing that I guess kind of sacrilegious is I love Jesus and the Holy Spirit fighting over who's the real father.
Yeah, Joseph, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Joseph. And Joseph. Or Jesus saying, if you want to follow me, you got to run really fast.
Your Bonus, the Belgian comedian. Actor. Oh,
great.
Yes.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
What's up, food for Santa?
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana. Have a whole bunch of...
Well, after last episode's failed internet search, I figured it was time we went to the top. Or, well, to the top as far as we can go. We reached out to the Latvian embassy to see if we could gain insight to the secrets of pierogi. Some culinary tips, or maybe a family recipe or two. We reached out to Sabine Janicella, Press and Public Diplomacy Counselor of the Embassy of Latvia, and she graciously allowed to be interviewed by two grown-up Christmas-loving men. You know, like real alpha males. I mean, we wrap our own presents.
All right, so you know, we are on a mission. Last year, we take all the countries that we cover within a year, and we go, and Mark and I, privately, we vote on what was our favorite movie, song, food item, custom, country, all of those things. If you look at us, you could tell we enjoy food. We always cover items, countries, like what they have serve at the holiday time. And so we privately picked, and our number one choice, both of us selected this year, was pierogies from Latvia. And we're like, wow. And obviously we knew it's just because they're described as bacon pies, and that just sounded incredible to us. But we thought, okay, since we both picked these, let's investigate and find out how to make these and what they're all about, and in the end, produce some pierogies on our own. So that's really been the mission, and we're learning, we're talking to chefs, we're talking to people like yourself. And so, one, tell us a little bit about Christmas in Latvia. And then anything specifically, if you're familiar with pierogies, if you've had them before.
It's like I would ask you, do you know Hot Pockets? And you'd be like, yes, of course. Christmas in Latvia is magical. It is fantastic. I think in a way you have to also remember that Latvia is very far north, so it gets dark very early. By the time Christmas comes, we get about 4 hours of sunlight. There's really not that much sun. It's covered by clouds, but you get about 4 or 5 hours of daylight. So it's just dark. And Christmas is magical because there's so many Christmas lights around, so many decorations.
Do people put up a lot of lights for Christmas because of its being dark?
The spirit of Christmas is to bring hope and cheer, because it is... Winter solstice is the shortest day of the year. So it's about being in a place in nature where everything is dark. So you put up as much hope for the light, for incoming spring. You know, the darkness is not eternal. Light will come. That's sort of the message for the winter solstice, which later turns into Christmas. And then when we put up the lights, we also want something that gives you hope, that is beautiful, that is sparkly, that brings cheer. So people put up Christmas lights. We decorate our houses with the lights, our apartments, just it's there for us, for other people who walk by. You want everyone to be a little bit more happy when it's very dark outside. Because it's dark, the Christmas time also comes with enormous amounts of snow. When it gets dark, snow sparkles, you get fairy lights, you get twinkling Christmas lights. They're everywhere in the city, outside, inside. It's beautiful. Then you have your Christmas trees that you bring into your home. You decorate them. And Christmas is magical for a lot of us because it's time for families. It's also quite long. As you know, we celebrate it over multiple days. So we get to see all of our extended family. You get to spend time with your parents, grandparents, the kiddos, aunts, uncles, nephews, nieces, just the very extended family. You all get to spend time together and you get to sort of celebrate the true meaning of Christmas, which is closeness, community, and love, and light, and hope, and just dreams. So that's how we celebrate Christmas. Something we take great pride in. Do have the very first Christmas tree.
Although doesn't Estonia fight you over that, don't they? I think we remember that. Estonia said, oh no, we have it.
Listen, we got the plaque.
They have the proof, Bob.
Yeah.
They have to get a picture of that plaque.
We have a plaque. We have the old testimonials. We have the first Christmas tree. And pierogi, or the bacon rolls, if you want to call them that, they're just amazing. Who doesn't like warm bread with a little bit of bacon? And you get to make them, you know, with your family, with your mom or your grandma or your sisters or whoever, your dads, whoever likes cooking in your family. It's not just like a Christmas food, though predominantly made for larger celebrations. We also make them for Midsummer. The sister celebration for Christmas, the Midsummer. So every big family holiday celebration that you have, you make pierogi. You just do. Your entire house smells amazing. You have pierogi. What's not to love?
Most places or parties that you go to, they would have pierogi there?
Absolutely. It's also an easy thing to make. It's a cultural staple food.
What's funny is that you say it's easy, and Mark and I are like, we were reading like yeast dough and speck versus bacon versus, we're like, oh my goodness, this sounds difficult.
If you make it so often for such a long period of time over generations, then it's just like a natural thing to make, right? So you're like, yes, let's get our flour, our egg, our yeast. Let's make the dough. You know, you go to your local butcher that you know, that you like, the bacon that he makes, the dried bacon, and then you get it, and you're like, yes, pierogi will be great.
Was the recipe you follow handed down from your family?
Yes, it was the recipe that my grandma made. She taught my mom. My mom showed me and my sister. My sister's husband makes different types of pierogi because he has his own family recipe, but they basically taste the same way.
That's interesting. So there's variations. How might they change it?
Sometimes you add a little bit different seasoning. Some people add a little more egg, different proportions. In the end, it's not that different. Whether it's 2 cups of flour or 4 cups of flour, whether you use whole wheat flour, whether you just use regular all-purpose flour.
Sabine, I know that we read that sometimes people in a more modern variation, they'll add pressed cottage cheese. That was
right.
The cheese they added to it, which we had never heard of, and some other things they added to modernize the recipe.
Oh, you can always modernize it. We also make vegetarian pierogi, at least in my family. We make vegetarian pierogi with cheese and egg. So we make that kind of a filling. Some people make sort of like a spinach, egg, cheese type of a pierogi where it's just a filled roll with something. You can make a sweet roll with jam if you want. That's also a possible thing to do, or cinnamon roll just in pierogi form.
All sound good. None sounds like the bacon one, though. The
The bacon one is unique, and it's definitely a fan favorite.
Do you know the difference between speck versus bacon? Are they the same thing, or are they different?
You think of bacon like American bacon, the thin slices of bacon, whereas you should probably think about pork underbelly. It's more of the pork meat that has fatty parts of it, and that's that quote-unquote speckis. It's the fat of the pig. And we usually use the dry-aged pork with a little bit of fat in it because you don't want it to be completely dry. So you fry it up a little bit, then the speck is the fat part of it sort of melts in the heat, and that's where you get the oil.
Mark, can't you tell that Sabine, she really has made this before? This is the most specific anyone has been with us on how to make this.
I'm taking very detailed notes, but also at the same time, pausing to imagine how good this is going to taste. Although Bob and I cooking it may not result in the same. We'll see. We're building our confidence.
Maybe we just fly your mom over or something to be. She could show
us. Listen, listen, at this point, we can try to make this one together. I know that the difficult part of it is that dough is simple, but the meat is the most important part of it. And you really need to get the right type of meat. So you should, that's why I'm saying you should probably look at like dry aged pork underbelly, where you cut it in the little pieces, small, not even bite size, just really small pieces that have both the pork meat and the fatty parts of it. So that when it gets heated on a pan and you add the onions and the peppers, little less salt, but salt to taste. That would be my only suggestion. The fat melts on the heat, and don't use the American bacon the way that you understand what bacon is, because then it's just not going to have the same texture.
If someone asks you to bring an item like around the holidays to reflect Latvia, is that what you'd bring, pierogi?
At our events here at the embassy, we have colleagues who make pierogi. Sometimes we order them and bring them to our events just to share with people. It's like, this is staple food for us. Have some pierogi. I would either bring pierogi or gingerbreads. In Latvia, during Christmas time, there's just baskets of gingerbreads, even in stores, like big Walmart type stores at the checkout. And you can just take a couple of gingerbreads and you're like, yay, I got a snack after I did my shopping. And the store just puts it out, from very small mom and pop shops to big enterprises.
Do you mean put it out for free?
Yes, for free.
Wow.
Take some gingerbreads.
Your embassy has to start to spread that through the U.S. That's a cultural thing we could pick up and promote.
Yeah, it's just there. When you check out, there's just a basket of free gingerbreads, and everyone just takes a couple and just eats it on the way out of the store.
To me, that's another nice message of Christmas. You know, sharing, community. What would you say is a notable difference between Christmas in the U.S. and Christmas in Latvia?
The biggest difference, without a doubt, is that we celebrate Christmas on the Christmas Eve, which is the 24th. And we open gifts on the eve of the 24th, not on the morning of the 25th. So we do that. And after that, I think it's just the differences, although cultural, are very minimal. From state to state, it's probably different. From family to family, it's also, I'm guessing, very different. But what I like is the universal message of love and hope and family unity that is both true in the United States and as it is in Latvia.
That kind of underscores our podcast. I mean, we started out, we wanted to look at Christmas in all different locations, and what you realize is how it is the same around the world, like those messages come out.
And that's what always brings me so much joy, that whether I'm celebrating it here in the U.S. or I'm celebrating it halfway across the world, you can always see that people sort of gather around each other just to show appreciation for everything that we've done for each other. And that's the sort of message that I like.
Well, Sabine, you've been a wonderful guest. I'm kind of thinking, Mark, maybe if we do ever make our pierogies, that we might have to send some to Sabine to test as an expert taste tester.
Well, let's make them and taste them before we start getting over our skis on that one, Bob.
What I will say, and this is one really positive benefit of our podcast, is we've discovered these places that we knew the names of, but we didn't really know about. One of the things in the movie that we watched about Latvia, it seems like the people are very outdoors oriented and like to spend time outside in Latvia. Is that true?
Absolutely. We have this joke that mushroom picking is a national sport. Over half of the country is covered in forests. So going out into nature is quintessential to our life. Half of our country is a coastline. The beach is also something essential to us. Being outside, connecting with nature is very much part of our lives. It's also part of our cultural upbringing. And we connect with nature in a very direct way, where we go outside, we spend time. If you are feeling a little bit sad, you go outside, you're like, okay, I'll walk in the forest. And then we keep on going.
Just the thought of it being half covered in forest is amazing to me. I was shocked to discover how little we know or hear about other countries. Like when we look up the trivia question and we learned about the singing revolution. And then when you all joined hands, when you wanted to separate from the Soviet Union. I mean, those were things that we were adults and living during that time and had no idea, never heard about those in our press or anything.
We just celebrated the 36th anniversary of the Baltic Way, where 2 million people from Tallinn to Riga to Vilnius held hands, started singing, demanded to be released from the occupation that they were under. It's a fundamental part of our history. And it was like a 400-mile human chain. So you can imagine on a scale how that is in the U.S. 400 miles, three countries, and 2 million of us holding hands on a global stage. It did have a massive effect on other countries and people who were fighting for their own freedom. In some ways, it resulted in the independence and reunification of Germany. I always like to remind people that the United States is just so very big. And there is so much happening from state to state to the federal, national level that it makes sense that for the regular person, you can't follow everything that's happening across the globe. So we are here to promote these things that we've accomplished, that we've done, that we've fought for, just so everyone knows just how far we fought for our freedom.
We spoke to a professor who lived in Latvia for a year. They moved her family there to teach English as a second language. And we had read about how there was the singing revolution. And she told us that when she was in Latvia, a lot of people encouraged them to sing, join choirs to meet people, other Latvians. And so is singing a big part of your culture?
Absolutely. I can't even explain to you just how much singing means to us. We actually have a song and dance festival, which is part of UNESCO's World Heritage. It's the largest singing and dancing festival in the world. It's just amateur choirs across Latvia. They all come together on one big, massive stage. It's just a one big choir of thousands upon thousands of singers. Choirs are a fundamental part of our heritage, and singing is part of it, of course. That's actually how my parents met. My parents were both singing in a choir, different choirs. They went to a song and dance festival. That's where they met, and that's how they found love. And so all of us joined choirs. I did too. So did my siblings. We danced our national dances. We sing our national songs. So it's part of the way that we keep our traditions and our heritage alive.
What do you do with someone like me who can't sing if I'm in Latvia? Do I get to participate, or am I just the dancer in the background?
You get to participate. The fun and great thing about amateur choirs is that everyone can sing. Some of us just sing a little quieter.
Good, because I was afraid I wouldn't have been able to meet a wife then.
And that's why I love culture. You see, you discovered a movie about Christmas, and then you discovered an entire country with its culture, nature, heritage, and you're just amazed. And that's why I'm such a big, big motor of showing other people our culture, just so they can have the chance to experience the diversity and the beauty of the world, of every single country that's there, and mostly mine.
That is the best closing note of all. I love that.
It's trivia.
Trivia. All right, trivia time. So when considering our festive foreign facts for Belgium, we found a little bit of a common theme.
Oh.
We are going to ask how Belgium is the size of New Jersey, but has 125 breweries making 800 different types of beer.
Wow.
Or we could have talked about how they serve low-alcohol beers to kids in schools in the 70s and 80s, and they tried to start it again up in 2001.
I think I'm sensing your theme here.
Or we thought about how the world's first beer pipeline is in Bruges and moves 1,500 gallons of beer per hour for 2 miles. Or how college students in Ghent, Belgium, stormed a medieval castle, lowered its porticoes, or the gate, and threw fruit from the walls at the police to protest the new tax on beer.
I like that one.
Yeah, I mean, come on, enough's enough. Finally, we considered the great story of Vincent Speranza. He's a World War II paratrooper from the Bronx who brought beers in the helmet to wounded soldiers in the Battle of the Bulge. His act became a legend and led to airborne beer in Belgium, which features a U.S. soldier carrying a helmet full of beer along with a ceramic helmet from which to drink it.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. But those were all possibilities.
Oh.
But we didn't choose them.
Oh, wow.
Just like we don't choose nice music. Well, we do choose nice music. We just choose funny music.
Yeah. We prefer funny over nice.
We prefer funny. Right. He's not your son. Now, these were all great, but instead we decided to do something a little bit easy. We want to know how they prevent tourists in Belgium from stealing beer glasses.
Okay.
And it's really interesting about this because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but on some trips to Ireland, the people I was with, who will be remain nameless, at multiple bars stole beer glasses.
It's souvenirs.
Like souvenirs. And then we went to Savannah. And the same group of people stole beer glasses from Savannah.
Oh.
So clearly, some people in my life have a problem with stealing beer bottles or beer glasses. But
so this is aimed at those people.
It is. It's very personal to me. So in Belgium, they do something different. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they require a deposit. But if you know this out there, fans, drop us a line, give us the answer, and you'll get a sticker. So what do they do to keep tourists from stealing beer glasses?
So, Mark, I have to be honest. I haven't really thought about Belgium much in my life. But after tonight, I'm thinking of a pipeline of 1,500 gallons of beer shooting for 2 miles. I'm thinking about students storming a castle. This is my place. I think I found it.
125 breweries.
Dressing like Santa and accosting passerbys to buy your booze. I don't know.
I can tell you that I grew up in the East, as you know, and to drive from one end of Jersey down to the other is not even a half a day trip. And so Belgium is the size of New Jersey with 125 breweries. And so what I'm trying to say to you, Bob, give us 3 days. Maybe 3.5 days in Belgium, we could hit all 125 breweries.
We'll bring our little beer passport and go to each get a stamp in each one.
But I'm afraid of, I guess I'm not going to go home with any beer glasses until I find out.
No, no, we need to know what the deal is.
Yep. So if you know the answer, let us know. But as we wrap up, let me just share a quote with you. He who has not Christmas in his heart will never find it under a tree.
Oh.
By Roy Smith.
I love that one. You can't find it under the Christmas tree. You won't find it if it's not in your heart.
That's right.
I love that.
Guys, I hope you're scared. Hopefully you're excited to watch the advent calendar. But it's Halloween and we are doubly festive. Hope you've enjoyed our combo of terror and tinsel and Satan and Santa. But if you know any of these fun facts or answers to our questions about Belgium, get a choice of stickers.
We need a beer. We need a festive foreign film fans beer. We have to talk to our friends at a brewery. We want a 4F beer.
I wonder if we could commission one of our favorite gingers to do that. I'll have to talk to him.
Yes. And we would have a song that we could play for him. Because he's our favorite ginger.
That's right, we do, from last year. thanks for joining us today, and have a great evening.
Oh, wait, here. Yes. I just have a gift for you. It's some linoleum.
I'll give you a bag of soap.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
Have a good night.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.